there, listeners. Welcome to episode 181 of Never on the Back Foot podcast. The stage is set for the inaugural season of the Women's Premier League, with five teams competing for the title. Following the cash spilling in the auction window, the action now shifts to the on-field battle as Mumbai Indians, UP Warriors, Gujarat Giants, Delhi Capitals and Royal Challengers Bangalore compete for a shot at glory. Here's everything you need to know about the Women's Premier League's inaugural season. On the podcast to join us for a discussion on the same, we have Habil Ahmed. He currently works with Sportskeeda, leading their commentary team, and has also written articles for the website, some of them being about women's cricket. He passionately follows the women's cricket and has vociferously supported the need for a women's IPL, which is finally happening. So without further ado, let's hop on to chat. Hi, Habil. Welcome to Never on the Back Foot podcast. First things first, how are you doing today?
Thanks for having me, Neha. Hi again. Also, I'm doing pretty well, I think. Mostly excited to talk about what we're going to talk about today. So, yeah, that's about it, I think. How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm doing good. Thank you. Just a little under the weather, but I hope this conversation, you know, brings me out of that first. Now we have the Women's Premier League that's finally happening, right? So how excited are you that, you know, it's all, you know, come to fruition and it's finally happening?
So I do not know how to put this into words, but I mean, I've been like crying about the Women's IPL, as we called it then, not happening for so long. And I was actually super happy when it was first announced that it'll happen. But then I still felt like, you know, like I think before it was announced, there were reports saying it would happen, but there was no official announcement. And then, like, you know, there's still that factor of, you know, do we trust them? Will it actually happen? Do we really believe it?
Yeah.
But I think once the, you know, the teams were announced, and obviously, like, now we're barely days away. And I think by the time this podcast comes out, maybe I don't know how close we will be. So, yeah, I'm super excited, though, especially with RCB having a team. I've supported the men's team all my life. And now I'm really glad that they have a women's team. More on that later. But, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, now the Women's Premier League starts on 4th March. This is just, what, 6 days after the Women's T20 World Cup. That is, again, so exciting, yet predictable, with Australia winning, ended in South Africa, right? Now, it runs till like 24th March, you know, before the men's IPL starts. So what are your thoughts on, you know, this whole scheduling and everything?
So I'm not particularly a fan of the scheduling, because obviously it's like packed right in the middle. And but then again, I don't think they really had a window that they could use. Obviously, like, there were talks of maybe, I mean, there was talk before, at least, of having it in parallel with the men's IPL. But I think even that would have been a problem, because viewership issues are bound to come up at some point, right? Personally, I think in that sense, I think it's great that it's been separated. But then again, like, it sort of isn't helpful for the players themselves, coming from a grueling tournament in South Africa and then traveling to India and having to play there. But of course, that's just part of the grind, I guess. It's just how athletes live their lives, I suppose.
Right. And even when we look at how BCCI, you know, auctioned the teams for the Women's Premier League, we saw it went for a combined sum of, what, 4,670 crore, which is like a huge amount of money, right? And now this was followed by a five-year deal for the TV, right, that went for 951 crores. And I mean, these numbers, right, when you think about it, are unimaginable for women's cricket. And obviously, it is such a slap on all those people who said, hey, you know, there's no depth in women's cricket. There's not enough talent and everything. So what are your thoughts on, you know, these unimaginable numbers?
So I'm not going to lie. I'm not much of a finance guy. But that said, I think these numbers are incredible, right? Like, because if I'm not wrong, this is probably like the second highest you're seeing in terms of TV rights for any franchise cricket league in the world, men or women, right? And it's like just only behind the IPL, which is insane. Also, I think these if I'm not wrong, the sum that the teams are like sort of auctioned off for, the combined sum, I think it was almost, I mean, it's obviously, I'm not sure how exactly it compares to the first IPL when they the first teams were auctioned off. But then again, I think it is in a way comparable, like in the sense that the numbers are on that level. But obviously, you can't compare them because of different factors which come through finance. So we're not going to get into that because personally, I don't know much. But that said, I think it's great for women's cricket that's happened, right? Because it just goes to show that there is a market out there, right? And there are people watching, and there are companies and brands and obviously franchises that are looking to invest in these in these cricketers, right? And it feels like the game's about to get taken a lot more seriously now. Obviously, hopefully there will be more teams being auctioned off in the future.
Yeah.
But let's see how that goes, right?
Exactly. And even when we talk about the matches now, they will all be held in Mumbai. We have the Bradbourne Stadium and the D.Y. Patil Stadium, that will be housing most of these matches. But do you still wonder why the home away format wasn't chosen for this inaugural league? And, you know, they just stuck to one venue, like just one city, right? So does it make you think why that happened?
It sort of makes sense. Obviously, I wasn't too happy with it happening. There could have been like a multitude of reasons as to why it happened that way, right? But I think that there were reports that suggested that one of the reasons they wanted to do this was because logistically it would become a lot easier for players traveling back from South Africa after the World Cup, so soon after the World Cup especially, to join their teams in Mumbai and then just have the whole tournament there. Plus, I think, like you had mentioned, guys, I didn't know this, so Neha told me, so just letting putting it out there. So, like you had mentioned, of course, there was that worry that, you know, maybe all venues may not get the kind of crowds that Mumbai pulls in, or at least the kind that Mumbai pulled in during the India-Australia series, as you mentioned. I think that sort of makes sense in a way, but obviously it's a little disappointing, right? Like, I live in Bangalore, so I prefer to watch RCB play in Bangalore at the Chinnaswamy. And you know the kind of electric atmosphere that stadium is capable of, right? And it's sort of disappointing, but hopefully maybe in the future we'd get to see all of this in their respective home stadiums, hopefully.
Absolutely. And, you know, one would hope that this tournament really sets the ball rolling. So, you know, we can have BCCI invest in other stadiums and, you know, have the home and away format as well. And again, when you look at the team structure, right now, each of the women's Premier League teams were allowed to sign a minimum of 15 players and a maximum of 18. And no more than, you know, 7 overseas players could be a part of the team, because only 5 would be allowed to play in a match. So you'd have 4 overseas players plus the 1 overseas quota player. So how do you look at this overseas quota? And do you hope that teams will use this properly, considering the purchases they've made at the auction?
So, I actually, very honestly, was a little confused about how exactly this would happen, because I don't know if it was, how well it was communicated. I was always under the impression that it was 6 overseas players, of which 1 could be an associate player. And then you could have 5 players in the playing 11 if that associate player played. So, that is the impression I had. But then I've been told since that, obviously, like, it is supposed to be 7 players. But then again, in the auction, there's a little confusion, I believe. One of the teams was not allowed to pick a player, pick a 7th overseas player, because they already had Tara Norris. So all of that came in. So that said, I think it can make sense. I mean, personally, it's a little disappointing with the number of players that were bought. Number of associate players that were bought, rather. In the sense, I mean, it was expected, but I was hoping for, like, say, someone like a Vaishnavi Mahesh or Mahika Gaur from the UAE, right? I was hoping that some team picks them up, because I think they're very exciting talents, and Vaishnavi Mahesh also seems to have, like, a really cool head on his shoulders from the interviews I watched, I think, during the Under-19 World Cup, right? So I think it would have been very interesting to have some of these talents on board. But then again, I don't think you can blame a lot of the franchises for choosing to back their Indian domestic talents, right?
Yeah.
I think it kind of makes sense that they say, preferred like Disha Kasat over like an Isha Wazar, right?
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I think I see both sides of it basically.
Right. I mean, it is a double-edged sword. You know, the more number of overseas players and associate players you have, it really pulls off the opportunity from, you know, the Indian domestic players who could have made it to the team. So maybe in retrospect, it was not that bad a decision. But here's hoping, you know, as the Women's Premier League grows and evolves, in the future seasons, at least we get to see more players. Because you have more teams, right? So that obviously gives a fair level playing ground to every single person to get chosen as well. And yeah, and even when we talk about the broadcasting, right, you know, for the Women's Premier League, now that went for a massive 951 crores. Now, this was even before the league got underway, and even the, you know, the 100 or even the WBBL doesn't see that kind of numbers. So, you know, seeing this kind of craze is phenomenal, right?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. I think I've said it before, like, and this just goes to prove that there is a market out there, right? And I don't think the likes of Sports 18 would actually go in and bid that amount of money if they didn't think, you know, that they'd gain something from it, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's a massive positive, like massive gain in for women's cricket in India.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, even in terms of like, I think like fans watching, right? I think it just goes to show that we probably will have fans tuning in from all around. And I think while we're here, while we're still talking about TV rights, I'd also like to give a bit of a shout out to the Jio ad that came out today.
Hmm.
The WPL promo, basically. I think it was done fantastically.
Yeah,
so I think it does look like they're all in on it, right? They've put in the money and they've sort of put their money where their mouth is. I think that's the same. So, yeah.
Yeah.
We've done all of that. And I think, I think we're on the right track in that sense. So,
like, absolutely.
Absolutely. For a great, a great viewing experience, at least.
Yeah, I mean, you know, good that you bring in the point that the social media game for all of these franchises has been great, you know, giving us a great sneak peek and insight into the training and, you know, the players joining the team and everything. And also, now when we look at the teams, right, we have UP Warriors, Gujarat Giants, RCB, Delhi Capitals and Mumbai Indians. Now, when you look at their auction, who do you think had a good auction? Because I've seen a lot of mixed reactions online. You know, people said, hey, this team had it better. And I mean, yeah, it's obviously subjective. But according to you, who do you think had that perfect auction, you know, with the perfect squad and balance and everything?
So, 10 minutes in, I was convinced RCB had the best squad possible. But that was 10 minutes in, and then obviously a lot more happened after that.
Yeah.
So, I think what, like, the dynamics of this auction in particular, given the number of players that could be picked and given the number of overseas players that were available and that could be selected, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think we've gotten to see fairly balanced squads throughout. Though you could argue that maybe UP Warriors could have had like a few, you know, like more recognized batters who play up the order.
Mm-hmm.
That's an argument you could have. But then again, I think it's mostly well balanced across teams, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm a fan of what Delhi did during the auction, to be honest. I think they understood the fact that as much as certain players go for big money at the start, there will be players that you get for less later on, and you could just play the waiting game and get some great players later on in the auction, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think they did that with Jess Jonathan. They brought in Laura Harris as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I think they played a great game here in that sense. But overall, I don't see why any squad should be disappointed with the players they brought in, because I think they've all done a pretty good job trying to sort of balance their squads out.
Hmm.
Of course, it remains to be seen if they can sort of, you know, follow that up on the field itself.
Exactly. And I think, you know, besides the whole money aspect, I think the tournament is going to, you know, give a platform to all of these cricketers, you know, showcase their skills, talent and everything, right? And this is a huge global stage. So what are your thoughts on, you know, this being the perfect platform for a lot of cricketers, you know, to make a statement, to, you know, reclaim their place in the side and even overall, you know, for the health of women's cricket?
I think it's a fantastic opportunity because I think this is one of the biggest talking points women's cricket fans had in terms of pushing for a women's IPL, as we called it earlier, like I was saying. But I think that it does go to show. I mean, like, so we've had people question the depth that Indian women's cricket has, you know, in the country, in the domestic scene. And this will probably go to show just how good they are and just how much they can actually do when they're up against like world-class players that are not from India, of course. And I think with all the eyes on them, I think it will also sort of help you, you know, like take note of people that do not wilt under pressure, right? Because obviously there's a lot more at stake here.
Yeah. Right?
And obviously I'm not saying that, you know, like if a player doesn't perform well right away, I'm not saying that it's a bad thing. It's just you need to adapt, and I think this is a great opportunity, right? Like, for example, I mean, if you have someone like Minu Mani, I get the pronunciation wrong sometimes, but if you have someone like her play alongside Marzan Kapp, right? I think that's a fantastic learning experience.
Yeah.
Right. Similarly, if when you have the likes of say even someone like Meghna, who has international experience, right? Because if she's playing alongside someone like Beth Mooney, right?
Yeah.
The amount of experience and the amount of sort of the fact that they've done it at the big stage that some of these international players have, I think that plays a massive role in sort of in developing these cricketers, right?
Yeah.
And probably like even if Meghna wasn't the best example, but you get what I'm saying. So Indrani Roy, for example, will now spend time with someone like a Sophie Devine, right? And obviously explosive batters, top of the order. I think that's a great experience to have, you know, like to spend time with each other and sort of understand how the game works, right? I think it was Dani Van Niekerk who said recently that during like I think one of RCB's videos, I think she mentioned that even she's got like a lot to learn from both from all her teammates, including the domestic players. And I think that's an interesting point because obviously it's incredibly humble of someone like her to say it, right? Having played all these years at the international level.
Yeah.
But I think she makes a great point though, because there's always something to learn for every player. Obviously, I think people will agree with me when I say the youngsters, the domestic youngsters probably will have more to learn from the others. But it still is a sort of, you know, give and take situation. And I think it'll be interesting to see how that pans out. And obviously, experience-wise, it's going to do all of these youngsters a world of good. And I mean, I know the question was more along the lines of the experience and what and the opportunity, but I think the money is important as well, right? I think while writing an article like a year or two ago, I was just going through how exactly the female cricketers at the domestic level are paid, right? And I based on that, I can tell you that I think even someone who's getting like the base prize of 10 lakhs for the tournament, I think that makes a massive difference to their, to their lives basically, and could sort of really push cricket as a full-time career for them. And I think that is very important to take note of as well. And it should be interesting to actually just see how the tournament pans out overall too. So, yeah.
Absolutely. I think you answered that question really beautifully, you know, bringing in so many factors that's definitely going to help the players, not just skill-wise, but even the financial stability and everything that comes with, you know, a big Women's Premier League contract as well. And although, you know, we have such an eclectic mix of good players, what are your thoughts on the captains chosen for the team so far? We have Smriti Mandhana, we have Beth Mooney, we have Alisa Healy and Harmanpreet Kaur. So what are your thoughts on these captains?
I think it's best we go one by one, since there are four captains that have been spoken about.
Yeah.
We'll start with Mumbai. I think Harmanpreet Kaur was the obvious choice, right? Like, you have the Indian captain in your team, I think you can't not name her captain. So it's pretty clear it was always going to happen. I leave it at that. Then if you could move on to RCB. Big fan of Smriti Mandhana, obviously. And I'm glad she's getting a shot at captaining this team. Mm-hmm. And I think it's really interesting. So, I think that was the obvious choice there as well. Face of the team, and obviously the team clearly wanted her on their side, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think she's always going to be captain. But that said, I think it's super interesting that she's going to be captaining the likes of Sophie Devine,
Ellie Sperry.
Dani Vanikirk, and Ellie Sperry and Heather Knight, right? Like you've got effectively three international captains, obviously, with whatever happened with Vanikirk. Let's not get into that. that is still three international captains. And I think it's amazing that, and of course, Ellie Sperry, right? So I think it's incredible that she's captaining all of these players. And I think this should do a great deal in sort of preparing her for the India job whenever that comes, right? Because I think we all know it's happening at some point.
Yeah.
Right. So there's that. And then, of course, I think to the slightly less popular choices on social media, at least, Alyssa Healy for the UP Warriors. Now, I might have a slightly controversial opinion here, if going by what people have said on Twitter. But I think Healy is not that bad a choice, to be honest. Right? Because she is vice-captain of the Australian team, and that Australian team, of course. And obviously, maybe I'd have preferred Deepthi Sharma over her, because obviously Deepthi's done this before. She's captained at various levels, right? Even in the Women's T20 Challenge, she has been captain. I think it's reasonable that people wanted Deepthi Sharma as captain, but I don't think he is that bad a choice, right?
Because
smart cricketer knows the game. Obviously, leave out a bit of salt that she's got. We keep that aside.
Yeah.
And I think it's an okay choice. I don't think it's as bad as people making it out to be. Beth Mooney is probably interesting. I personally do not know how that one's going to go. I mean, I don't know how any of them's going to go, but I'm just a little. I thought maybe Snehrana had a shot there, but they made her vice captain. They made Beth Mooney captain. I think probably all of that experience and that winning nature that comes with part of being part of the Australian team, right?
Yeah.
I think that probably sort of was in her favor. May have helped that Rachel Haynes is part of the coaching setup, but that's a different question, different topic for a different day. I think Delhi are yet to announce their captain, but there's a weird situation where Shefali Verma sort of shared an Instagram story saying she'd be named captain and then deleted it almost immediately. And I think it was picked up by three people and it didn't really go viral and nobody had a screenshot, unfortunately. But if anyone other than Meg Lanning is named captain on that team, I think something seriously wrong there. But yeah. So.
Yeah, I mean, many people are also speculating, if Jemima could be the captain for Delhi. But now that you bring in this aspect of, Shefali Verma and Meg Lanning also in the race, I think they would rather go with Meg Lanning, right? She's just coming off of a big victory in the World Cup that just concluded.
True. And it obviously must help that, she's captain of the most dominant team that cricket has seen in I don't know how long now.
Yeah.
Right?
Exactly.
And like you said, I think I'd love to see Jemima as captain, to be honest. Big fan of the player myself, and I'd really love to see what she does as captain. But that said, I think Lanning as captain should be a no-brainer. And maybe I'd have loved to see Jemima as the vice captain's choice, vice captain. But hearing that there was a story on Shefali Verma's Instagram account, I was like, are we sure we want to do this? I know she's won the Under-19 World Cup as captain, but are we sure?
Yeah. Right? Because this is a big responsibility, leading a women's Premier League franchise, and she's still young. And when you have experienced people, perhaps, asking them to be the captain would be more ideal, right? She can just train under them.
Yeah, I mean, I think making her the vice captain probably wouldn't be as bad an idea, for sure.
Yeah.
And they generally have, I think most franchises, they're likely to work as a leadership group, as they say.
Uh-huh.
So I think that would be a good experience. I think whoever's on that Delhi team, working with someone like planning, I think would be great for them, right? And there's obviously going to be so much to learn and so much of that attitude to sort of imbibe, right?
Yeah, yeah.
It'd be great either way, I think. Though ideally, I think planning should be kept in.
Yeah, and even when you look at the format, right, for the Women's Premier League, now each team plays the other four twice, and we have the top three from this stage, you know, qualifying for the playoff stage as well. Now the table toppers, you know, will reach the finals automatically. You have the second and third place also, you know, competing in an eliminator. So what are your thoughts on this whole structure? Similar, right, to the men's IPL?
Yeah, very similar. Obviously, the men's IPL, having more teams, can afford to send four teams into the playoffs. With five teams, I think, yeah, it makes sense that they have the top three qualifying into the playoffs and second and third playing an eliminator before facing off against the winner in the final. I think the WPBL has a similar format, or is it the BPL? Okay, one of them has a similar format at least.
Yeah.
I think both, actually. But obviously, they have like more teams involved, so they have more teams in the playoffs as well. That said, I think this is like the logical way to go about things, right? You can't have five teams playing and then four teams make the semis, because that feels awfully out of order.
And
I think rewarding the top three makes sense here, and obviously rewarding the team that was consistently top, consistent enough to finish on top at least, I think it's a great format, and obviously second versus third should be fun, as sort of like a game before the final, and then we need to see how that goes, because it was discussed quite a bit during I think the WBBL as well, wherein the team that finishes first goes a while without actually playing a match, right? But here, of course, it's a smaller break because there aren't as many teams. It'd be interesting to see if the team that finishes second or third can, you know, sort of uproot the team that finishes first and actually win the tournament. But yeah, let's see.
Yeah, this will be quite interesting. And considering this is the first Women's Premier League, and this is going to be the first, like a series of many firsts, you know, the success of this Women's Premier League will also probably bank on a leap of faith. We've seen how franchisees, you know, advertisers, players, and there's like a huge audience, you know, that's waiting to see this tournament unfold as well. And I think we can look forward to quality cricket, irrespective of gender. And, you know, there's just so many amazing things that await us. So what are, you know, some of your expectations and thoughts, you know, going ahead in a few days? You know, this is probably going to change the way we perceive women's cricket in India as well. So how are you looking at it?
For sure. So like if the last few years of women's cricket, even like at the international level, or even at franchise level in England or in Australia or wherever, right? If all of that is anything to go by, I think it is clear that, you know, the sport is actually finally taking off, right? And it's sort of headed in a direction where it is kind of the future. Franchise cricket, I think we've sort of accepted it, some of us begrudgingly, some of us happily, that it is the future of cricket, right? And the fact that the women's game is also going in that direction, I think, makes sense. Right? This is not to say that international cricket will be redundant or anything like that. Right? But that said, I think it is important for franchise cricket to exist. I think it is important for franchise cricket to exist in the women's game in India. More so since you can see what the IPL has done for the game in India. And obviously, it'll be a long while before the WPL achieves that kind of insanity, right? But at the same time, I think, you know, like, we are headed in the right direction. We have a fan base that is sort of really eager for women's cricket now, at least more than it was, say, 5, 6, 7 years ago, right? And I think, though I feel maybe the right time to start this league was a few years ago, I think at least it's come now, and I think people have been craving for it for a while. And that will play into like audiences really tuning in to watch these matches, what these cricketers play.
Hmm.
And with respect to quality of cricket, though, I think that is an ever-improving aspect of the game, right?
Hmm.
Especially when there is when the sort of the you know gaps are being bridged between like in Australia and the other teams, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's difficult to see that's happening right now. It's probably not yet there.
Hmm.
But I think the more you see them see like higher level of competition between these teams, I think the more you will sort of appreciate the quality of cricket there is, right?
Yeah.
I think that's something the WPL will bring in for sure, right? In terms of, like I said, like we spoke about a little earlier, the teams are fairly balanced. It's it's not like any of the. I mean, you could argue that you know certain teams do not have players in certain for certain roles and all that, but more or less they're fairly well balanced, right? And
yeah,
if each team that has their players doing their roles, respective roles, right?
Hmm.
I think like the closer it'll be and the more competitive these games will be and the more appreciation the quality of cricket itself will get, right?
Yeah.
So I think it's going to be brilliant cricket throughout. Unfortunately, it'll just be 23 weeks of cricket, but
mm-hmm.
If there was more, I think we'd have all lapped it up, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, and while we're still here, I'd just like to make a point here that I'm glad it's T20s that is happening and we haven't gone down the T10 path just because
yeah,
WPL
yeah.
Not right here. Just putting it out there, not naming anyone or anything.
Yeah, I mean, it's you know still good that it's a T20 format and let's hope it stays that way. And
I'm pretty sure it will. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, as we reach the conclusion of our discussion, do you have any final thoughts? You know, who could be the winner of this inaugural league? And do you have a message for our listeners?
First of all, there's absolutely no way I can predict a winner here because, like I said, I generally feel most teams are extremely well balanced, but
yeah.
In my head, I think we could see Delhi Capitals win a trophy.
Ooh,
possibly, but I'm obviously hoping for RCB to win one.
Same.
And
yeah.
And I will not be saying those four words that people keep talking about. Yeah, we're not going there.
Yeah.
And I think the WPL is going to be like a very fun tournament. The first edition, so all the excitement's there. And
yeah.
I think that sense of mystery is still there, but I think once the tournament starts, I think we'll know a lot more. We'll understand sort of what to expect, and
mm-hmm.
I think it'll be a lot of fun.
Yeah, I mean,
and as for our listeners, I mean, for your listeners technically, since we're in episode 181.
Yeah.
First of all, I do not know why Neha has taken 180 episodes to get me on here. I'm a little angry, but we're not going there. I'm kidding. Do keep listening to the podcast because we generally have like wonderful content going up here. And I think if you've gotten this far, I think you generally are listening to it a lot. So thank you for listening, I guess.
Right. And on that note, we draw curtains on our episode. Thank you so much, Hubble, for you know joining me on the podcast and answering the questions so beautifully, you know, sprinkled with humor and a lot of, you know, interesting answers as well. And here's hoping I can have you back on the podcast and it doesn't take another 180 episodes to have you back.
I'll keep my eye out for episode number 362.
I hope I last till then, but...
You will.
Yeah, but here's hoping I can have you back on the podcast. And until next time, take care and bye.
Thank you. And I hope to be back soon. Thank you.
Cheers.
Thank you so much, listeners, for tuning into this episode and for your unstinted support throughout. Please follow and press the bell icon on Spotify and subscribe to the podcast on Google Podcasts for the latest episode updates and stay tuned.
do check out @NeverInTheBackFoot on Instagram and @NeverInTheBackFoot on Twitter for the latest facts, terminology, retweets, fresh tweets, and a lot more that's coming up this cricket season just for you. The podcast is also available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Anchor, Overcast, and a lot of other platforms. So please do spread the word. Until next time, stay safe and take care, listeners. Bye for now.